The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to October 2004.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in a very unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and today we got the big three here, and I'm not talking about Ford, Daimler, Chrysler, and GM. No, I'm talking about our big three professors because we're waiting for two other ones to slide out when they finish their office hours. So let me introduce the big three who are here now. To my left, from the Department of Philosophy, its chair, who just brought down some delicious cookies from their departmental meeting. Thank you, Beth Oljar. Oh,
I'm delighted. I'm glad Dave and Marty didn't scarf them all.
I was going to say, how did you keep that from happening? Dave is like an eating machine.
Dave was talking.
Okay.
So he couldn't talk and eat at the same time.
There you
go. I think
that
was
pretty
much
what
saved me.
Good man. And Professor Lever, whose his wife is expecting a new Lever.
Yes.
Marty better eat all those cookies while he can.
Absolutely.
There we go. Now, on the other side of the table, at the far end, from the College of Engineering and Science, it's Director of Pre-College Engineering Programs. It's Dan, the Depps at Man Maggio. How's
Hi,
it going?
Kath. Good. I'm good.
And I hope you're enjoying these delicious cookies.
They're delicious.
That's right.
And I speak while I eat.
Kroger delicious.
Don't we all?
I have no tact.
Let's go Drogering. Yes. Now, I remember hearing Neil Young in concert, and the first time he was in Detroit, he said he heard people talking about a store, and he misheard it as Droger's, not Kroger's. And finally, the third, but not the least of the third, and how appropriate to speak in fractions, from the Department of Mathematics and Math Education, it's Professor Jeff Boats.
I'm trying to be the least of the third, but I can't seem to drop this summer weight I gained.
Don't do that. Don't be the least of the third, my friend. That would be so wrong.
I can't do that either.
No, you don't want to do that. Well, this is a show where you send us questions, and if you stump the panel, you win a terrific T-shirt, either Ethics Bowl or Tech Day T-shirt. And if you don't stump the panel, you get the same thing, so come on. I mean, what's there to risk
you
here,
really
folks?
Can't lose. We're so egalitarian.
Are we going to reinstate the autograph photograph and the photograph autograph?
Well, that's something we need to
talk
about.
Because that's such a classic part of the show.
It is, you know, and I think that we should give that a go. I think we should.
We'll have to find
out who's got the best digital camera around.
I could try to take that over, but God knows, I already have 1,000 jobs.
I know
but
you
But 1,001.
No, we don't want it to turn into a rabies
night Next time
for
if
you.
I remember, which I won't, I'll bring my digital camera. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can do photograph autographs.
All right. It helps
because
train for the
if we sign a sheet, we could print it out in color.
That's
and that
right.
could be the
photograph.
Yeah. We can get photograph paper and make it look like a real
with
photograph.
With digital cameras, we can do all sorts of stuff,
yes.
like put a little devil's horns and beard on Roy.
All right. Why not? Sounds good to me. I think
so
we'll go
I
with that.
I think maybe we can move on that. And then
okay.
we can just take a very simple picture of us in the hallway.
There we go.
You know, put them on me.
Eric should have a cowboy hat and a tin star.
Okay, that's right, Sheriff E. Barnes himself.
Can I be in a toga or something?
Cool.
As a philosopher, you should be.
What do I get to wear? Don't answer that question.
I was going to say, Dan, whoa.
Whatever you want, dear.
Yes.
Whatever you want. So if you want to get in on what will be down the road, the autograph photograph or photograph autographed, and, of course, the T-shirt, you can do that in a number of ways.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
And before we get started, those noises you hear in the background, we're not taping somewhere at a truck stop on I-80, okay?
We are, but...
We're at Truck World, actually, near the border. No, just kidding.
Why don't I close the window? It's not warm in here today.
It will get warm quickly.
It will get warm quickly. Right. This campus, the McNichols campus now, is experiencing just so much renovation and rebuilding and just all types of things. The Commerce and Finance building has been completely gutted and redone, and it is pimping. It is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's gorgeous.
You've
got to go. Gorgeous altogether.
You haven't gone in? Oh, you need to go.
I got to make Bruce Burby give me a tour.
In fact,
in
between our
Bruce.
Building when we're taping here in Briggs and there was this sort of brick square area that many of us thought was going to be the Commerce and Finance barbecue pit, but we found out actually it's the foundation for a statue of the Blessed Mother. So sorry about that, campus.
When you see the classrooms in there, you're going to be jealous.
Yeah, you will fight and kill to get into that room and building to teach.
Gorgeous. When you walk in, if you can picture in your head what it used to look like,
yeah.
you cannot recognize the
no,
old building.
No, you do not think
you
you're in the same building.
Wow.
Wow. You,
I can't believe that you haven't gone over.
Oh,
let's walk afterward.
If I
can stay.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And we've moved the College of Health Professions and the Macaulay School of Nursing over to this campus. So there's been a new wing put onto Lansing-Riley Hall, which is looking good. But that's what you hear in the background. So I tell my history students at 8 a.m. that when we get to the Marshall Plan and the rebuilding of Europe, that they will have a complete idea of how this is going to work and sound.
Because they'll have sound effects.
Yes, they will. So let's turn to our first set of questions, which were given to me actually by our former moderator, Ed DeWitt, because he thought that it would be a good...
No kidding.
Well, these are about the GOP in NYC.
Oh,
he got
Lord.
This out of the New York Times.
Oh, boy.
And he thought that these would be appropriate questions.
I think you're talking to the wrong group. But
I don't know.
I wasn't invited to that one.
They didn't ask you?
Nope.
That I would not go to any of their other parties.
They thought I might cause a scene.
You? Not at all, Jeff. Okay. There are, let's see, how many questions here? Yeah, there are 20 questions, and Edwin said 15. 20 is passing. So.
Percent?
75.
He's tenured. He can be tough.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say,
even I could figure that one out.
Okay, the Republicans Party became very attached to a certain city in the earliest part of the 20th century. In fact, they held their conventions there for 5 straight times. Okay, so over that period, 5 times. What was the name of that city?
Saratoga.
Is it East Coast?
No, it's not an East Coast city.
Oh, it's not a New
really?
York.
No, it's not
thinking,
a New York.
Okay.
It's just about the Grand Old Party.
Southern?
GOP. Not Southern. Definitely not. The,
oh, no. Oh, really?
Yeah, because the GOP...
Would it be
no,
Texas?
No, this is from the early founding. I mean, this is like in the early 20th century. Think the city of Big Shoulders.
Chicago?
Chicago, that's it. From 1904 through 1920, there were 5 Republican conventions held there.
Is Chicago considered Republican nowadays?
Well, no, but I think because the GOP was a party of the Midwest when it was founded in the 1850s. You know, I think that maybe that was probably the affiliation. It was also a central hub, too. I mean, you know, when you think about railway and, you know,
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, so it wasn't too East Coast nor too far west. Sort of Middle West, you know, a little compromise
Midwest.
That way. At the first wartime convention of the 20th century, the Republicans nominated Thomas E. Dewey in Chicago in 1944. Dewey received 1,056 of 1,057 votes cast on the first and only ballot. Can you name the lone dissenting vote, that is, who somebody else voted for the presidency in 1944?
Who cast the vote?
No, who that was cast for, who would have been the other person. It's wartime, remember.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah, right. They were totally fond of him.
Uh-huh.
What year was this?
Patton or Ike.
44. It wasn't Patton or Ike. This would be another general. Good discernment there. Good deduction.
MacArthur?
I think
De Gaulle?
No, I think Dan said
MacArthur,
it. That is. It's Douglas MacArthur.
Oh my.
Yeah, but no, I know you were talking about, Dan.
Really one of the most arrogant people probably who ever lived.
Well, it's odd because later again he wanted to seek the Republican National nomination, you know, but sadly Ike beat his behind, so there you go. Who was the first Republican presidential nominee to accept the party's nomination in person at the convention? Because prior to that, they didn't always go. The Democrats certainly changed that earlier than the Republicans.
Hmm.
With somebody that we just mentioned.
Dewey?
Yeah, Thomas Dewey. It was an amazing thing when Franklin Roosevelt actually flew out to Chicago to accept the Democratic Party's their nomination. Hmm. Prior to that, there would be someone from the from the committee that would come to that person's home, you know, and there would be a ceremony there, and you know, at the candidate's home.
Well, that seems sort of nicely civilized. Why couldn't you do both things?
Yeah, I know, doesn't it? Well, I think like John Kerry's trying to do that with these front porch visits that he does. But yeah, that was always the big thing, you know, that you would go to the nominee's home and then do this formal acceptance. But Roosevelt thought this would be a very dynamic and very dramatic acceptance, which he did, which is where he introduced the phrase, the New Deal.
Uh-huh.
I pledge to you and the American peeps.
Was he in his wheelchair when he...
No, he walked. I mean, he had that very sad gait that he was able to push his legs forward, you know, with the braces and then clutch a podium. You know, he had very good upper body strength at that point. So it looked like you know, he might have limped and he had that cane, but he stood. The only time he ever gave a speech in public where he remained seated was sadly when he returned from Yalta in 1945. And he even told the audience, and this was a national radio broadcast, very sadly, that it was so difficult, this journey, that he didn't want to stand with this extra 10 pounds of braces. That's the only public acknowledgement he ever gave of his infirmity.
Well,
that must
have been right before he died, then.
And it was. Yeah. It was, yeah. I mean, that was in the spring of 45, so poor bugger, that was not good. This general election, the first since September 11th, the 11th attacks, is accompanied by intensive security measures. The New York City Police Department will be the most visible security element during the Republican convention, but the Secret Service is going to coordinate protective operations. What is the nickname or the code name for a vehicle in a presidential motorcade? What might they call that?
Liberty's car.
You would think, I thought it'd be something cool, but it's really kind of like
Minnow.
No, it, you know what it is? It's like the name of an old Western, a classic Western by John Ford, starring a very, very young John Wayne. A type of transportation in the Old West.
Oh, chuck wagon?
Not chuck wagon, but a different wagon.
Covered wagon.
Covered wagon.
Stagecoach.
Stagecoach.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you know, I guess maybe that's that Texas influence thing. You know.
Could be.
You know, there you go.
Isn't liberty the code word for the president?
President,
the
yeah. Secret so Services? You would have thought like Liberty Wagon, well, Liberty Boogie, Liberty something.
Robin Williams joked that the code word was Gilligan.
Gilligan's
little bunny.
Oh no! Oh my God!
That's why I guessed Minnow earlier.
There the we Minnow. Go. All right. Who was the first woman to deliver a keynote address at a major political party's national convention? This is amazing.
Recent?
No, it's not recent, and it's at the Republican National Convention of 1972.
Oh. Oh, that's recent.
Well, recent enough, but...
It's not 72.
Yeah. I mean, I find that unbelievable.
Jane Fonda. No.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. She came right on in.
She would have been their
Republican,
top guest.
Republican, hear me roar.
Yeah, really. Oh, my God.
Is that...
It's Anne Armstrong.
Oh, no.
Okay. But I guess here's the reason I'm surprised. I think it's someone like an Eleanor Roosevelt. I mean, I just find it shocking.
Republicans didn't get around to having a woman speak until 72?
That's right. That's amazing. And when we think about that, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor
presidential election flashback.
What former First Lady's home was considered neutral ground for North and South during the Civil War?
Well, we know it wasn't Mrs. Buchanan.
That's
because there was no Mrs. Okay. Buchanan.
Martha yes. Washington?
No, the Civil War.
Oh,
yeah, but home.
I can see why you don't do free Civil War.
Yeah, right.
Oh, but I thought her house had been preserved.
No, this is. She was still around.
Oh, someone that was still there.
Mm-hmm. Mary Todd Lincoln?
No, her husband had died in 1849.
Really?
Pierce? No.
Not Pierce, but the right last letter.
Polk.
Okay. That's right. Sarah Polk. The place was known as Polk Place, strategically located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, conveniently.
Yeah, really.
It was the last thing to be conveniently located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Did Sherman wipe it out?
You're listening to an encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor program from October 2004.
And we're back. Yes, indeed. And needed. That's so rock on. And we're back with questions about the GOP in NYC. And you guys are doing really well. You know? Look at Dan. I wish you could see Dan's face. It's so marvelous. Dan's like, get out of here.
I'm focused.
Okay. How many American presidents were born in New York?
Oh, a bunch.
Well, you know, not as many, of
I'd
course,
say
as
three.
Ohio.
Ohio's got seven.
Close.
Does Ohio have seven, right?
Yeah, Ohio's seven, but you're very
New York
close.
Two.
Well, at least
four.
Two.
Four. Okay. There
the
you
other
go.
Close.
You are close. You were totally close there. What do you call that when you're only one off in math?
You're one
off
away.
By one.
Off by
off
one.
By one.
No. Or you're wrong and you flunked my test. Okay. I just wondered if there might be a term for that, of being very close to something in mathematics.
Off by one.
I'm hoping, you know.
In the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood. Okay. 2004 marks the first time the Republicans have convened in the Big Apple for their national convention. How many times have the Democrats held their national convention in New York City?
Three.
No.
Four.
No.
Zero.
No, too low.
Six. Whoa.
Five.
Oh.
Five different times they've held their convention in NYC. Yeah. I was there, actually, for the one in 1980.
Why have the Republicans avoided New York?
Don't know. That's an interesting question. I'm surprised they were there this year, except for the backdrop, the 9/11 stuff. In New York City alone, that's not exactly a big Republican voting town. You know, I mean, until you get out toward Long Island and that way, you're not finding a whole lot of real strong. Although they did elect wonderful Republican mayors like Fiorello LaGuardia, who was a Republican and a reform Republican and greatly beloved. The last time a sitting Republican president was nominated by his party was in 1992 at the GOP convention in Houston. How long did the nominee, President George Herbert Walker Bush, speak in that year for his acceptance speech from the convention?
How long did he
speak? How long did he speak?
90 minutes.
That's a little high, actually.
Oh, it just seemed 45 like 90 minutes.
It just seemed like 90 minutes. Okay.
45 minutes.
That's a little low.
I don't know.
An
63.
Hour.
He came right in at an hour, 59 really? Minutes.
Did
he
the just, music start?
Yeah, wasn't that awful the other night at the Emmys? It was sort of like, come on. I mean, although I did like when your man started singing. That I thought that was very clever.
My man?
Your man, the one who, I forget his name, but he was really good that started singing that way.
Who?
I'm trying to think of which was an award recipient that he said, oh, good, they started playing the music, and he started kind of singing along with that. I thought
I
that was
watch
brilliant.
It.
Whose speech went long at the 1992 convention, therefore knocking Ronald Reagan's appearance out of prime time? Now, this speech
Pat
was...
Pat Buchanan.
It was. That
oh,
was,
it was
remember
so
that,
scary.
Yeah, that was the Battle of the Culture
The Culture War
Wars.
In America. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was terrifying.
Yeah.
I just remember sitting there open-mouthed like, he can't really be saying this in public.
Oh, yes, he can.
And he did. Although he's just written a new book about the loss of conservatism. I mean,
well,
that,
yes.
Yes, which is... I mean, I know people might scream at me here, but I am very interested in reading that book.
No, I wouldn't scream. I mean, there's an interesting, I'll just hate you, but,
but no,
I won't scream.
No.
I mean,
no, but I think people like Buchanan and Goldwater have a better understanding of what it means to be politically conservative than
yeah.
a lot of other people do.
He claims that the Republican Party of today has gone past what he saw as the neoconservatism of the Reagan years, that he, especially the war in Iraq, that he feels that that has been a betrayal of the Republican Party.
He feels that they should stay true to the original.
Yeah, to the, that he's worried about deficit spending, which he claims no
Republican
would support. That he's, I mean, he. So he's talking about the Republicanism of Reagan, you know, and so I was. It was very interesting.
Before Reagan
yeah.
went to bed with the Christian Right.
Right, exactly. That's what he was talking about. George Walker Bush's GW's 2000 convention acceptance speech ended with the words, "Thank you and God bless you." Do you remember what sentence he uttered directly before that?
Who sneezed?
Good. Nice, Jeff.
Well, God bless you.
Okay, I'm going to give you some choices here. A, together we can build a better America. B, I will restore honor and dignity to the Oval Office, so help me God.
That sounds like a Klingon.
Whoa.
C, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. And D,
no, that's not.
And we are ready for the day to come.
The D. Please don't tell me it's B.
It is D.
It's
yeah,
D?
It is D,
okay.
And we are ready for the day to come.
Kaplach.
I think he used that line about honor and dignity to the Oval Office during the debates, but I don't think he did it at the convention. There we go.
Oh, that would be ironic.
Both President Bush and Senator John Kerry were members of the Skull and Bones Society when they attended Yale University. Other than Mr. Bush's father, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was the last president to be a member of the Skull and Bones at Yale?
And that's rowing club, I'm assuming?
No, it is not a rowing club.
Oh, no.
It's a fraternity.
It's a,
couldn't have been Nixon.
Oh.
No, Nixon did not go
to Yale.
I just assumed that it was that, but apparently it's not. What is it?
No, it's like a, it's a fraternity. It's a kind of a secret society.
It's a
definitely
a spooky fraternity.
Well, we're hearing about it, so it can't be that secret.
Well, big on networking with former members of the society who typically have positions of great wealth and
power.
And power.
Oh, it's one of those clubs.
Like the Corsellian.
They chuckle at the Illuminati.
Yeah, so... This is a president who's probably best known, sadly, in many ways, for his weight, even though he later was on this.
Couldn't be Taft.
Yes, it was. William Howard Taft, who was a Yale graduate, who later went on the Supreme Court. Yeah, our 300-pound president. I know, isn't it? And that's sad that most people do truly know him as, you know.
Well, Aquinas was fat, too.
That's true. So, you know, there's something to say about them, about these guys. Okay. Which wartime president changed vice presidents between terms? So during wartime, changed his vice presidential candidates from the first and second.
Nixon didn't do it between terms. He did it because Agnew was...
Well, he kind of had to because, Agnew got convicted, you know, kind of thing.
Roosevelt?
It was Franklin Roosevelt, certainly, that his, you know, he...
Oh, I was looking for a Republican president.
We have limited
president.
Choices of wars.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you know, there is that. There was that.
I was thinking of... it had to be a Republican president, so the war that came to mind was Vietnam.
Yeah, this question doesn't really fit in there, which is, okay. In which year did the Republican platform first call for a constitutional amendment banning abortion?
72?
No, that's a little early, which I'm really surprised. I would have went with that one, totally.
80?
1980, yeah. So that would be how many years after Roe? Like 8 years? 7 years?
When was
Roe is 73.
73? Oh, okay, yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I would have gone with Jeff's. I would have gone with like that or 76.
Well, I feel better now.
Oh, I'm glad.
Thank you, Kathy.
There you are. Very good. Party platform planks range from the serious to the offbeat to the contentious. Which party declared in its 1984 platform that, and I open quotation, Americans were environmentalists long before it became fashionable. Our farmers cared for the earth and made it the world's most bountiful. Our families cared for neighborhoods as an investment in their children's future. We pioneered conservation that replenished forests, preserved wildlife, and created the national park system. Which party made that claim?
Well, I would say Democratic. But I'm obviously wrong.
I think Republicans would say that.
It was a Republican party. Which is true, that when you think about Teddy Roosevelt in particular, who was a great conservationist, set aside tons of government land for reserves.
Well, and in Oregon, too, a lot of the
yes.
most important conservation and reconstruction work, especially the downtown area in Portland, was done by our Republican governors were actually environmentalists.
But that's not how I viewed today I would always guess that the Democrats are the environmentalists and the Republicans are not.
You know, but it's interesting how that has changed because when you had someone like a Roosevelt or progressives, which I would assume would be out in the Pacific Northwest, that was terribly important to them. I'm not so sure environmentalism is real high on their agenda today in the same way. If you know.
But I think in the 70s, yeah, there were. I mean, because I remember.
Nixon actually was a strong. Yeah. I mean, some of the legislation that he sponsored, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm saying this. God, someone get to cleave my tongue from my mouth.
I love Nixon.
Yeah, I had a hard time for many years. I couldn't even teach about Nixon in my class because I was so afraid I would not be balanced and fair in my presentation. I would refuse to talk about him. Because I was so terrified, I would say something that was not fair and to the students.
But since the early 70s, environmentalism has been here. I remember when Earth Day started in 1992, and Drew and I are looking at each other like, recycling is a new idea. Where have these people been since? I mean, that stuff's been going on. You know, we've had bottle bills and recycling legislation in Oregon since then.
Yeah, GOP was originally an acronym for what?
Didn't always mean Grand Old Party.
It's Old Party, but originally something more...
God's?
No, not God's Old Party.
God's Only Party.
Great?
It's Gallant Old Party.
Oh, the Gallant Old Party?
I think that's a little off there. Okay.
Not a word you would apply to Lincoln. I mean...
I was going to say, you know...
You could say the Gay Old Party.
There was a Gay Old Party. Hee-haw. Gerald Ford wrapped up his 1992 convention speech in a hurry because of what reason?
Could you repeat that?
Gerald Ford wrapped up his 1992 convention speech in a hurry because of what reason?
I don't remember him speaking
in 92.
This is odd. This was at the Astrodome.
There was a baseball game?
No, they were like, get out of center field. It had to do with something that dealt with
the kissing bandit right out.
Did the lights go out?
It was an electrical problem. Oh. The podium was losing power, and it was going to cause a major electrical outage throughout the entire Astrodome. So they had to tell the former president that he had to stop speaking because of this electrical malfunction with that.
Not a great loss.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. The Republican Party symbol of the elephant was designed by Thomas Nast, the famous cartoonist and illustrator. What magazine did he work for? And this magazine is still in place today.
The New Yorker?
The New Yorker?
Not the New Yorker. Good guess. That would have been one of the first.
Atlantic Inquirer. Playboy?
No, that's Bunnies. That's not that.
Oh, Buddies, sorry.
That's just Bunnies that way.
It's not Atlantic Monthly.
Harper's, did you say?
Oh, Harper's.
You said Harper's Bazaar, but it's Harper's.
Well, she meant to say that.
Oh, okay.
I did.
Well, because Harper's
if
Bazaar.
That's right, I meant
she
to
said
say
Harper's,
it.
That's Bazaar.
And no, that's a fashion. This is Harper's
is
the commentary.
Condé Nast Publications?
No, not the same Nast.
God, and the historian showed
and
up.
And we've just been joined by Professor Finkenbein from the History Department. We're doing questions about the Republican Party.
Oh, goody.
Like New York City itself, Madison Square Garden is as much of a state of mind as it is a configuration. How many New York City arenas were named Madison Square Garden before this current one opened in 1968? Because the gardens have been in different
spots.
I'd say
four.
You are so close.
Five.
Three.
It's three. Yeah.
Close means one, by the way. You missed that part.
Yes, yeah, so that we got an explanation finally of what one means, close to one by in mathematical terms, which was really, really good. And let's see here. And our final question.
Off by one.
Off by one. That's it. Off by one. So close and yet so far.
Story of my life.
Ed Koch, who is the former New York mayor, who is apparently a Democrat, crossed the party aisles to start
a Zell Miller Democrat.
In commercials. Oh, and we're now joined by Professor Kurtzinger.
Slowest typist in the town.
That's okay. You got to do. Oh, and the bell.
Saved by the bell.
The only time we like Saved by
there
the Bell.
There you go. Okay. But let me stop here, and hopefully everyone will tune in next week to hear that last question. But let me thank our panelists. Professor Oljar.
Bye.
Professor Kurtzinger.
Fleeting as it is.
It's okay. Professor Finkenbein.
Still bud nipping.
Professor Meggio.
Thanks for running in, Edwin.
Okay, and Professor Boats.
Finally, we have enough to play hockey.
There we go.
It's an Ask the Professor presidential election flashback.
What future president signed a petition in college protesting scarce and intolerable food?
Teddy Roosevelt.
No, earlier.
Taft.
Earlier.
Earlier.
Earlier. One of the really early ones.
Washington.
There's a city in Michigan named after
Jackson?
Him. To the south of us.
Monroe.
Monroe. Oh.
I was going to say, I never heard of President Adrian. President Blissfield.
President Flat Rock.
President Trent.
President Zug Island.
Yeah. President Zug. That's what we need, yes. What president became known as the man without a party?
Nixon.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this is...
How recent was
this? This is mid-19th century.
Yeah.
It was like a
Van Buren.
Poke.
Buchanan.
That ilk.
Oh, okay.
Think of Tippecanoe.
Tyler.
Harrison.
Tyler.
Oh.
Because he told his Whig cabinet he'd be making his own decisions, and the cabinet resigned.
Oh, great. Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building on the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Today, Ask the Professor was produced, technically directed, witnessed, and everything done by Michael Jason. Our executive producer is Dr. Barbara Bowles. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Come on, NHL, we need ya.
Matt Mayo and your Ask the Professor panel for 2024 are back next week with more brand new episodes. So send your questions today and make plans to join us.